All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com.
Welcome to episode 287 of the DFO Rundown, brought to you by Betano.ca. And there are playoff races, there are seeding races down the stretch. 11 games tonight, 11 games on Saturday, lots of play. Of course, the madness also begins today at Betano.ca. If you're looking for upsets, baby, it's a place to be at Betano.ca. How are you? I'm Jason Greger, alongside Frank Saravalli, fresh back from the GM meetings, where Frank, not a whole lot to report on. It sounds like the review for puck out of play over the glass is going to become challengeable by coaches, even though this season there is 234 cases and only twice was the call on the ice actually wrong. So I don't think it's a real pressing issue.
Yeah, I would agree, but that's one of two small wrinkles that's changed. So not exactly headline material. The other one is it's puck over glass. The other one is friendly fire, high sticks. So if there's a minor penalty called on a high stick that was their own team's stick or their own player's stick, that can be reviewed and rescinded. But to your point, if not, if either one of those challenges are unsuccessful, then not only does the penalty stay, but you also get an additional penalty for the unsuccessful challenge. So it becomes a 5-on-3, which I don't know exactly what the rate is for scoring on 5-on-3s, but it feels like it's north of 50%.
Oh God. I would think it would be. Yes. So, but let me just for a second, Frank, because here we are on.
Are you angry?
I'm not angry. I'm disappointed, Frank, is how I would say it. As a parent would say, you know what? The best thing to say to your kid, I'm not angry.
I just got a shiver up my spine when you said I'm disappointed.
Exactly. So the NHL GM meetings, there's nothing really pressing, but there is one easy rule change that doesn't impact anything. It's not reviewable. It's not going to lengthen games. All it's going to do is going to stay on pace with what the NHL is doing all regular season. You play more games against your division than you do any other division separately, right? We know that. They want to promote rivalries. That's what they've been trying to do. Yet, in the NHL, for whatever reason, I don't understand it. And I love the crossover when it's 5-3. It makes sense. You want the eight best teams with the best records in the playoffs. But if the eight best teams are four from each division, why are we having a crossover? And here's my example. This is the perfect example as to why it's idiotic. So right now, because of a grand total of 1 point, or actually it's by points percentage, which I know you like, Frank, and Winnipeg is 0.03 points ahead of Vancouver in the standings. I wouldn't say they're a massively better team. Fair? Fair. But because of the 1-8, the top team gets the second wild card. Right now, Winnipeg would play Vegas. Vancouver would play Nashville. And so the benefit that Winnipeg and Vancouver get from finishing first and second is having significantly more travel. So right now, and I went off the site, and this is just from airport. So if somebody wants to get more technical on the actual city, knock your socks off. but I'm using accuracy and consistency and going from airport to airport in each city. So if you traveled from Vancouver to Nashville, it's 3,278 kilometers, or for our American friends, 2,037 miles. Now, if Vancouver was in their own division and they were going to Vegas, well, now it's cut in half to 1,598 kilometers or 933 miles, significantly lower. Then you go Winnipeg to Vegas. That's
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's going to be 1,500 miles, about, you know, 50% more than the 1,000 miles it would be if it was 1,090, if it would be Winnipeg and Nashville. Like, what the hell are we doing? Like, this is, there's no rhyme or reason why the NHL, they focus on things like, well, there was two out of 234 incorrect calls on puck over glass, so let's change that rule, but let's not fix something that is very simple, is very easy. It does exactly what we say, that we want to promote rivalries, and it's actually better for our game because now teams aren't traveling as much. But why the hell would you want to finish first? Oh, so you can have twice as much travel in the first round? Like, it's ludicrous. Ludicrous.
I'm actually going to disagree with you on, I understand what you're saying and the premise of if there's eight teams, it should be four and four and you should go in your own division. I get what you're saying, but I think if you're, it has to be within a certain number of points. And for me, I think you're looking at it in the correct way as of at the top. The benefit of battling to the end and getting the number one seed should be playing the worst team in the that makes it from your conference. And right now there's a 5-point gap between the Preds and the Golden Knights. I know the Golden Knights have one game in hand, so, but it's at the very least a 3-point gap. Does that widen by the end of the season? Does that get closed? We'll talk about Vegas in a minute, but my point would be there has to be the benefit of finishing as the number one seed and getting what was a worse regular season team. So to me, if you're going to put in a points cap of, hey, if these teams are within 3 points of each other, then it's 4-4, meaning you go and play the team in your division. But otherwise, the crossover makes sense in that there should be a reward for finishing with the top spot. So to me, I get what you're saying, but quibbling between Winnipeg and Vancouver at the top isn't really where we should be focusing our attention. It should be on the bottom of the standings for the actual reward.
But isn't the reward negated when you have to double your travel? For 3 points, you're going, look at the percentage of 3-point differential compared to 3,278 kilometers.
I get what you're saying. I get it, but Maybe what you should do is if you finish first, then you have the right to pick which wildcard team you want. How about that?
You want to take the Professional Women's Hockey League rules, which I'm not opposed to it, but I don't think.
Well, because most of the time, as cool as the PWHL rule sounds, it's only a 6-team league and 4 make it. And if you're the number one team, you only get to pick between 3 and 4. In this case, it would be the first seed in the East or West getting a chance to pick between one of the two wildcard teams. Maybe you base it on travel because you're thinking, hey, we're going to be playing for 2 months. We want to try and conserve our energy as or our bodies as much as possible. Maybe you find that the travel is worse, but the matchup is better.
Yeah, we had this last year. Funny enough, it was Winnipeg and Vegas who met in the first round. And Winnipeg and Seattle, who are the two wildcard teams, had the exact same amount of wins. Now, Seattle had more Gary Bettman loser points, so they finished ahead. But they had the exact same amount of wins. And, hey, Vegas went on to win, so they'll say, hey, yeah, it's great. To me, it goes against everything that they're doing for minimal points. And usually your 3-point cap or whatever you want to put it as, heck, I would, because one or two wins in the course of a year, is a team really that different? Like, honestly.
No, but right now it's a 5-point gap, and 5 points over the course of an 82 game season, it doesn't sound like much, but most times it's the difference between making and missing the playoffs and a significant advantage, whether you're in your conference bracket or not, your division bracket or not.
Well, if I'm Vancouver, I'm not resting my guys because I'd rather finish first because I have significantly less travel. And yes, I get a weaker opponent in theory, but it's more so to me about the travel and the wear and tear. And I know the Eastern Conference teams, it doesn't really matter, right? Like, they're all in the same time zone, although there still is more travel depending on where you're situated for some of those teams, no question about it, right? You're flying out to Florida.
The longest flight you could possibly get is 3 hours.
Yeah, which is still nothing. But right. But like now you have guys, not only is it the travel distance, it's also two time zones, right? Like it's just a significant difference for me, especially, when you get into playing at your games 2 and 3, the time zone. And then of course you get to game 5, 6, or 7. Now you got multiple travel time. I don't really understand. Like if your whole theory is you want the teams to have the best or the lowest possible thing, then just go 1-8. It's like they're half pregnant again, right? We got half of our series where it's versus the best and worst, and then the other ones are locked in automatically. So I don't know. Just there's no consistency is all I'm saying. Like, to me, it's like you've got two playoff formats going on inside the same playoff year. It's guaranteed that 2 and 3 have to stay in their division. Even like, look at the Central. In theory, the Central this year might be the first, second, and third top teams in the entire Western Conference.
But that might be the same in the Atlantic as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so they'd have to play each other. So, and if you want to do that, then fine. Then do it both ways. You can't just do it halfway. That's all.
Like, it's so, to me, the most interesting part of this week at the GM meetings was really the stuff that wasn't said. And we can talk about the CTE conversation with Chris Simon. We can talk about Arizona and that front. And there's also LTIR and eBug discussion. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's go with eBug and we'll finish with Simon.
Okay. There was some conversation this week about gathering potential options to present to the NHLPA this summer, different ways to professionalize the eBug. And if you've listened to this pod since the beginning, I've been pounding my fist on the table for that because I just think it's incredibly amateur that we're pulling in accountants and Zamboni drivers and backup university level goalies from U Sports in Canada to eventually play in NHL games. It's like, my argument has been, could you imagine pulling someone out of the stands at an Eagles game to take snaps in the NFL? Could you pull a lawyer from the stands that suddenly is pitching in relief in a Major League Baseball game? Like, these things would never happen in another sport. So don't tell me that it's because of salary cap limitations and those type of reasons as to why we continue to have this pop up. And now some people will say, but it's only been what, 3 or 4 times in the last 5 years? To me, that's 2 times too many. That's just my own personal opinion. And mm-hmm. So it's not just an amateur optics viewpoint. The best league in the world at the most critical position is using amateurs at times. There's also probably a safety feature as well that we haven't really talked about. Like, no one's gotten hurt and no one has gotten absolutely shellacked in net. David Ayers, of course, ended up winning. But should we really be taking an accountant and throwing him in net against the best players in the world, shooting 95 mile an hour rockets at him when the best level of hockey that he played was club in college? I mean, the whole thing just seems off. And to me, I think there's a million ways to be creative and to fix this issue. And it seems like behind the scenes, at least, it's gaining some momentum to get to that point. We saw more teams this year than ever carry three goalies. Detroit, Montreal, Philly, Buffalo. There's Carolina had four at one point on their roster. There's been lots of teams that have had extra goalies this year, and most of it due to injury, some of it due to contractual status where they just don't want to lose guys. But for me, baseball has a professional bullpen catcher. Now, I know that they don't have a salary cap, and the point here would be to put limits in so that you know, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you can't just go out and spend $2 million to get the best third goalie in the league. No, we're paying these guys. There's a cap, and you can pay them at the very most $85,000 or $100,000 a year. They travel with your team all year. They get the scraps of practice time. They don't take up any space or net in your practice when both guys are healthy and want to practice. And the rest of the time, they're hauling equipment bags. Like, this isn't really that complicated of a thing to solve in terms of bringing a third goalie in the mix.
Yeah. Well, I know you talk to goalies, some teams like Connor Hellebuck in Winnipeg, they have a third goalie who comes on the ice for practice, which limits the amount of days he has to practice, which allows more rest
for him. Who is it in every city in Winnipeg? Yeah. Fine. In Edmonton, you can get a guy. Toronto, same thing. Who are you plucking out of the clear blue sky in Arizona, Dallas, Florida, Tampa, Carolina? The quality of third guys that are just practice fill-ins and potential e-bugs varies widely throughout the league. And that's not just what the visiting teams are upset about, because those are some of the teams that get stuck with these guys as e-bugs, but it's also some of the home teams in those markets. We don't have the ability to get any good talent because we're a non-traditional hockey market where we don't know if anyone is living here who's actually any decent.
Yeah, no, that's fair. To me, if you put a, you figure out whatever the number is you want to use, you know, if the guy's going to be traveling with your team the whole time, you know, I'm sure the PA's going to have something where it's what, 250K, or pick out the number.
No, 85 or $100,000. I'm telling you, that's all you need. Guys in the ECHL are making 35 to 50 grand.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not that hard to get a professional level ish guy that on the off chance once a year, he's ended up being pressed into duty as either the backup or someone that has to play a half a game until you can get your AHL guy back up there. It's really not that hard, and not hard to be enticing. You take a guy who is ECHL level goalie and you give him a 2x pay raise and say he gets to, you know, live in the lap of luxury all year long flying on an NHL charter. Like, how bad is it really?
Well, and the fact that they would likely then use him more in practice at times if they wanted to, right? Some guys could stay out later in practice and work with the
you know, scratches, the injured guys. Like, there's all ways to have this be beneficial. Like, I guess my point is, and the only reason I bring it up is it does seem like it's gaining some momentum, and that the league said that they will be hoping to present some different options as to how to maneuver this as soon as this summer.
Yeah. Oh, that's, you know, it's good. I think it's needed. There's no question about it. So, that's great. It'd be hard to find a reason why people would be opposed to it. Right.
Some people like the novelty. They like the idea of the everyman getting called in for one game. The you know, Steven Wino, our friend, wrote a book about it. Yeah. Emergency goalies, the wildest one-day job in sports.
Yeah. Well, there is that, I guess, as well. When you consider how infrequent it is, you know, teams will look and say, well, now we're going to spend $3.2 million if it's $100,000 a team that we've never spent before, and it happens once out of or twice out of 1,310 games. Is it really worth it?
That's actually the big debate is, do we actually have a problem here, or is this just an optics thing that people sometimes don't like?
Yeah. Because if you look at the amount of games played in an NHL season and the amount of times an e-bug actually gets into the game, not like dressed is one thing that doesn't count. I'm talking actually in the game, right? Has there been an e-bug playing this year?
No.
I don't think so. So,
but my argument would be, I think goalies get hurt more than ever before. I don't know what exactly the numbers are, but how many teams had both of their goalies healthy all year?
Might have to go through the list. Yeah, there's a few.
Carolina's on their they've had five guys in net.
Yeah, well, yeah, but they got guys who are injured every year, Frank. It's like, gee, Freddie Anderson's hurt again. Antti Ranta's hurt. Oh. What? Oh my God, color me shocked.
I get it.
Yeah. But you're right. Other teams will have it at times to time. So I'm sure the wear and tear in the position. I know that goalies at bare minimum would like their team to have a third goalie for practice more. I've talked to lots of goalies about that. And that's something that they would like. Now, that doesn't cost a team anything, right? Like other than, you know, a minimal amount where you guys, they don't travel with the team. They come out for practices a few times and away they go. But I can see why they would consider it. But at the same time, you know, like Edmonton used one where he came in and played 2 minutes, right? Got an NHL game late in the game. It was a blowout game. So it's kind of fun. It didn't hurt them. But, you know, what are we talking about? Once every 3 or 4 years where you see an e-bug in a game?
It's so more sure than that. NHL, yeah.
I'm sure the NHL is going to look and say it's $3.2 million if we're using 100K as the number.
Well, you don't have to do it. If you don't want to spend it, don't spend it. Just you don't get the right to bitch when you get someone that eventually ends up in your net.
Okay. You're just saying open up the option and then it doesn't count on the cap. Okay.
Yeah. No. Shouldn't be that hard. There should be a way to do it.
All right. What was the other topic before we get CT you want to touch on?
Arizona.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, another Groundhog Day topic. What I would say is, there was lots of reaction and there was lots of ways to read between the lines of what both the commissioner and Bill Daly said following Wednesday's day three of meetings. And the biggest thing that I was left with was really what wasn't said, because the league had an opportunity, if they wanted to come out and basically say the Coyotes will be playing at Bullet Arena next year. And that's what the situation is.
Yeah.
If you haven't been following the story, sometime in June, I think it's around June 10th, is an auction date for the Coyotes owner, Alex Mariuolo, to have a chance at auction to buy State Trust land. Now, the league acknowledged on Wednesday that if it gets to that point in June, it will be too late to pivot for next season. If they lose the auction, it will be too late to pivot and relocate that team somewhere else. Bill Daly basically said, I think we'll have run out of clock by then. Now, the schedule doesn't typically get announced, or there's no hard and fast rule that they have to announce the schedule by the draft, but it's typically certainly been out before then, usually. It's draft week at the latest. Now, it would have been easy to say, well, then does that mean that the Coyotes are staying in place for 2024-25? And they stopped short of saying that. And when asked to clarify if that's what basically the league was saying, he said, read into that what you will. And some people took that as, well, that the Coyotes are unlikely to relocate. I personally take that as, and based on the reporting that I've done behind the scenes, is that the league has a decision to make before getting to that auction date in June. Do they pull the plug? And what would be the method of having that plug being pulled and pull up stakes and send the Coyotes to relocate to Salt Lake City for next season? I think that's a very real possibility. And from the people that I've been talking to, the next question is, how do they do that? What's the machination to do that? And some of the thought process has been that the league makes whole the Coyotes, meaning every dime that they've spent to this point on the franchise, which apparently is a massive number, between the sale price, the checks that they've been cutting every year, the debt service that they've been paying, all those things. They get the league then receives the Coyotes franchise back in control and then gets a massive relocation fee of whatever that is, billion plus, probably maybe even $2 billion from Ryan Smith in Salt Lake City to then transfer the team there. Now, the question you could ask me is, wouldn't Ryan Smith just purchase the team from the Coyotes and move them? And the answer is, well, then the league misses out on that money and the rest of the teams don't get any cash. So that's not exactly a palatable option for the league, even though having the franchise finally be settled would be pretty important. But the other part of this is, it sounds like the Coyotes are not willing to let this go, even though the league, I think, is more than frustrated and is, you know, trying to wrestle control of this situation because they don't want this to go on forever. Like, let's say best case scenario, you win the auction in June. There's a bunch of other things you have to go through before you can then get steel in the ground, before you can then a couple years from now have an arena up and standing. It's still a long ways off, even if you win the auction.
Yeah, it's at least two more years playing at Mahler Arena, maybe three. What's interesting is May 31st, 2011 was when Winnipeg, and I'm going through the last team that relocated, was Winnipeg when they announced it, that they were taking over Atlanta. So that was May 31st. Not
70 days from today.
Yeah. But not much earlier than the June, what was it, June 10th date? Like, we're talking 10 days. They also purchased the team from Atlanta, right? So there wasn't that relocation fee.
There was a relocation fee that went to the league.
But it was minimal.
They purchased the team and it was $150 million relocation fee.
Okay. Yeah. It was minimal in 2011, 13
but that,
years.
No, that, but that was a considerable sum in 2011. Because think about some of the other teams that were sold then. The Florida Panthers went for $150 million total. They paid for the Thrashers and their debt and then paid the relocation fee on top of it.
Hmm. So you think they're going to get that much? Well, good for them if they do. Clearly, it's a profitable business. I can see the players are probably like, wait a sec. We're missing out on this money again.
So, but the players have never been party to it. So
no, I know. I'm just
why
saying,
would like, they now?
Yeah, no, but I'm sure they'll bring it up.
But the big thing I think that's happening behind the scenes is I think the league is trying, and this is why Gary Bettman said on Wednesday, I don't want to talk anymore about Arizona. I don't want to answer any more questions. Their ownership is set on trying to, you know, win this land, and we'd like to have the team in Arizona. I think the league is trying to figure out from a legal standpoint, how do we navigate this scenario if we want to take back control of this team? What's our course of action? And is it the proper thing to do for a franchise that is owned by someone? Can you just, even if you're making them whole, what are the ramifications if we try and take back control?
What about they barter a deal, Frank, that says, okay, we're going to, you're going to get some money from, he's going to pay the team out. They're going to relocate. And then if you win that land auction, you want to build an arena, then we'll grant you an expansion team in 2 years when it's ready. Because I think the NHL wants to expand.
Well, they do. And so I do think that there's been talk about that. But, and I don't know this for certain, so take this with a grain of salt. But what someone told me is they don't want to be partners with Alex Mariuolo anymore.
Okay.
So if they were to go back to Arizona, I think it would be someone else. But I do think that that's part of this, is that the way they save face on all of this is to say, we're moving the team to Salt Lake City, but in a 5-year, whatever, just hypothetical, in a 5-year period of time, we are going to expand, and Arizona is going to be one of the destinations that we set our sights on because we believe in the market, but we just don't have a proper arena situation right now. So that would allow you to reboot the team with a new arena ready to roll, like we've seen in Seattle and Vegas, and have proper ownership and probably a new brand and identity that doesn't have any of the baggage attached to it that the Coyotes have.
Man, I get the theory behind it. All I know is I could see why the players are tired of the current situation and that they want it remedied as quick as possible.
So, that's what I was saying, though, in the sense that the league said X publicly, but these are all the things happening behind the scenes that they've basically, it's less than seven, because May 31st, I don't even think they want to wait that long.
No.
That's 70 days from today, March 21st, that we're running up against it. Like, these are the final throws, I believe, of the Arizona Coyotes in the desert.
No. Some would say, and no, I know that there are a percentage of diehard Coyote fans and they'll miss hockey, and I totally understand that, but the situation just isn't great. I don't think anybody can disagree with that. And the team hasn't been good basically for the entire tenure in Arizona, unfortunately. And so to me, the key thing would be, if they brought a team back, is find a way to make them competitive. I think you'd realize maybe what a much better fan base you have if your team is actually ever competitive. Because really, outside of 2012, they've never really been that competitive.
Agreed.
Yeah. So Chris Simon, obviously, first of all, it's a horrible situation for his family. There's no doubt about it. 52 years of age, commits suicide. And, right away people talk about CTE, and I understand it. But I think it's a very important issue that is not talked about nearly enough. And, so Chris Simon, again, I want to be very respectful in how I say this. It's awful for him and his family. But do you know how many fathers who don't play in the NHL who are committing suicide? Suicide is a major issue amongst men. It's a major issue amongst boys. For people who don't know, boys ages 15 to 20 commit suicide 5 times more than girls, same age. Boys 20 to 25 commit suicide 6 times more than women. Men are way more suicidal than women are. The stats have shown this for years. And the highest rate of suicide amongst men is 75 plus. A lot of men just say, you know what, I'm out. But you know what age group is second highest, Frank? 45 to 55 men. And it's a real issue. There's lots of different stressors in your life. There's lots of men who don't have CTE who commit suicide. And so I understand that Chris, maybe his are related to it, but the bigger issue here at play is a societal one for men that's never talked about. And everybody gets on their soapbox and gets, oh, we got to reduce fighting. I'm like, suicide is a major issue amongst men. And you know what? 99.9% of them aren't playing hockey and fighting. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a much deeper issue. And so if people really care, those who write their articles and slam their fists on the desk, who say they really care, then why aren't you writing articles and talking about the massive problem that is never talked about in our society? And it's men taking their own lives at a lot of different age groups.
Hey, we had a suicide in our family earlier this season, very, very beginning of the year. That's rocked our family to the core. It made our holidays really difficult and painful. So I hear you and I agree with you. I think it's a really, even just hearing the news of Chris Simon's death a couple days ago, the first thing I thought of was like, oh man, I could see the headlines, former enforcer, CT. There's a lot to unpack with Chris Simon. I don't know this for certain, but talking to players and teammates that were close to him, there were significant financial issues. He was one of those players, I believe, who had money stolen from him by a financial advisor and lost. Yeah. So he was in a bad place financially for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
and that's a And it's funny that you say that, Frank, because
that's another massive issue
yes,
with hockey. A lot of hockey players from that generation, specifically when they first started really making money in the NHL, they were preyed upon by lots of phony financial gurus and wizards that the money just disappeared and evaporated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously there's the physical component. He was part of those, I believe, not just the concussion lawsuit, but also some workplace comp claims saying that he couldn't hold down another job because of the hockey injuries that he had. A lot of times those aren't always head injuries. Those are, hey, I can't use my hands. I can't, my back, my
shoulders.
Yeah. Back. Whatever it might be. Like, these guys are sometimes in really tough spots. I do want to give a lot of credit to the NHL Alumni Association and Glenn Healy and what he's done with that group to try and provide help for players that we will never hear about. And the stories that come across his plate are really sad. But I still think, A, there's more that everyone can do, the NHL, the NHLPA, the Alumni Association, and B, I do think the game has gotten a lot safer over the last 10 years plus. And I think the Department of Player Safety, starting with Brendan Shanahan, did a great job trying to curb some of these hits to the head. But at the end of the day, there are no secrets anymore. There's an inherent risk to this job. And we do ask a lot of these players for entertainment value. I think the least we could do is better support them once they stop playing. But this idea that, you know, I've seen all the concern on social media for the way Matt Rempe blasted into the league, fighting, hitting. He's a big boy, quite literally. And more than that, he's 20 some years old. He's able to make decisions on his own. He knows, and now everyone knows well enough, whatever risks are associated with repeated head trauma. That's the choice that he's making. That's the choice that all 750 NHL players are making on a year-to-year basis, is that you are paid handsomely, you earn a good living, but on the back end, you may be dealing with things that the rest of us might not be.
And I do think it's important to remember, when they did the study, 3% of concussions came due to fighting. Lots of them come from hits. And actually, a higher percentage came, Frank, from just inadvertent falls, because you're playing on a massively hard surface. You smack your head and your neck. And so, you know, everybody always, it's easy at times to automatically go to fighting because you see it. Very few people want to do it. And it's like the highlight reel thing.
Yeah. But back in the day, Chris Simon, 101 fights.
Yeah.
101. Like, there's serious trauma there. I don't care however good you are at fighting. Those are bare knuckle punches to your head.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, there are guys like him, but then, like, Jason Strudwick, a good friend of mine, he had 100 fights in the NHL. He has no issues, right? Ty Domi had the most fights in NHL history, right? Like, there's lots of other guys.
It could be a lot of things. It could be genetics. It could be like, there's some stuff that we still don't know.
Yes. Yes.
But I think 100%. Maybe the disappointing part that everyone was really bothered by was the tweet that I sent yesterday on Wednesday, when I asked Bill Daly specifically, has the league's viewpoint changed on CTE and the definitive studies that have shown that there's a definitive link between CTE and repeated blows to the head. I mean, we now know, like, we're talking National Institute of Health, the US military, the NFL, all these different organizations have acknowledged these medical studies that are beyond clear. And I think at this juncture of the game, the league's already settled a concussion lawsuit. It's mm-hmm. It's done, buried, and over with. They basically got off scot-free. What my point is, and a lot of people would be and responded this way, why continue to deny? why not just the NFL acknowledged it? They came out after their lawsuit was settled. They said, yep, we see these studies and we do believe that there's a definitive link between CTE and repeated blows to the head.
Yeah. Is the NHL worried that if they admit to it, Frank, that it'll lead to another lawsuit?
No, I don't think it can. I think it's over. It was a class action suit.
Well, then
they've passed the point where they're liable.
Yeah.
That's the point that if there's a business reason to say it, then I understand if you need to protect the shield, so to speak.
Sure.
But if there isn't, then why not just say it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause I don't know enough about, like, if somebody who wasn't involved in the initial one wants to come forward later on, could they? Like, I don't know. I'm just asking the question. Right. And so maybe that's what they're worried about. Right. Somebody says, aha, they finally admitted it. Now's the time that we're going to go and now say, look, they're on record as saying there's a connection. So me or my late husband or, you know, whoever is involved in it might come around. I'm just wondering if that's the reason, but, you know, it's the NHL under Bettman, and we can't be surprised. Like, that's who he is. They've always done that. He will look you square in the eyes. Done it to me personally. Oh, what are you talking about? All our games start on time. A simple thing like that. I'm like, what are you talking about? You print it on your own website. I see the start time. It's not 07 or 37. But anyway, so if they're willing to say that,
fair, though,
straight to your face, it doesn't surprise me. That's just kind of being their MO under Bettman.
And to be fair, I do think that, look, the Chris Simon family is grieving for sure. It's an awful, awful situation.
Oh.
But they said they think he has CTE. There's no way to confirm it until they examine your brain in a brain bank after you die. Yes. So it's pure conjecture from their family, and not saying that he doesn't have it, because it's probably likely, given his career, that he does. But to say, you know, he had CTE, well, that's not factual either. So it's just conjecture on the part of their family right now until his brain can be examined. And I would also throw in there, if his brain can be examined.
Oh, yeah, I know that makes a big difference. I think, you know, you could make a rational connecting of the dots, but you're right, Frank. It's not a confirmed connection.
And that also doesn't, to your point, doesn't mean that that's what ultimately led to his death. It could have been a contributing factor, but
there's money, substance abuse, there's childhood trauma, which I don't know if he had any or not. But if you look at the leading causes of reason for suicide, right? And it's very important to mention that it's, you know, family tension, there's emotional, physical abuse, violence, all lots of things, mental health, of course. Is a
he had been divorced twice.
Right? Like there's
a million things. I don't know if he grew up on a reservation, but apparently, at least some of the reporting was that his death occurred on a reservation. I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. That it's not as simple as just saying CTE caused Chris Simon to die.
Yeah, and my whole thing at the end of the day is, I would love us, and I think it's important, if you're in sports media and you're going to talk about suicide, then talk about the silent killer that it is, especially for men in everyday society. And I know we have lots of men listening and, you know, lots of women listening. Check on the men in your life. It's hugely important. And most of the time, and Frank, you know what? I know when we talked about this, when it happened in your family, a lot of times it's unexpected. You don't necessarily see it coming. It blindsides people. It's awful. A lot of people keep some really horrible thoughts to themselves, and it festers and it builds. And it is something that needs to be discussed. And for parents of young men, ages 15 to 20 and 15 to 25, it is significantly higher in your young boys than it is in girls. And that's something that, if we're going to talk about Chris Simon, and, you know, I hope he rests in peace, and I hope their family is able to grieve properly, that he's just another one in a statistic that is an awful statistic for men in our society.
It's tough.
It's tough to, and it's tough, and people say, oh, it's sport, but you got to talk about it. You can't just ignore it anymore. I don't think
the tough part is when you can talk about it And I think we've gotten to a way better place of that as a society, is that even when you acknowledge it, even when you know that it's a problem, even sometimes all the help in the world isn't enough.
No.
And I think that's the other part that's just absolutely guts you as a human being, is there's just some people that are absolutely tormented.
Yes.
From morning until night. And it never stops.
If you are one of those people, at least give yourself the benefit of the doubt and tell someone. You'd be amazed at how many people will miss you way more than you think. That's the one thing a lot of people think, oh, they'll be happier if I'm gone. No, they won't. They never will be. So never think that way.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk for an edition of Fill in the Blank.
Hey, gentlemen. Happy to pop on once again for another edition of Fill in the Blank. It is delivered by DoorDash, 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more. All you need to do is download the DoorDash app and enter the promo code Nation25. You can even take advantage of the Double Dash feature, which allows you to add a second stop onto your DoorDash order for zero extra delivery fees. You guys touched on a lot of the big stories floating around the hockey world right now, but you left one for me to kick off Fill in the Blank. John Tortorella, healthy scratching his captain, Sean Couturier, was blank, Frank.
Unnecessary. I watched the Flyers really closely. I understand that Sean Couturier hasn't been at his best the last few weeks, but I would say that of all the list of players that you could have scratched, there were many others that had played worse. And I think it sends a strong statement and the wrong statement when you decide to scratch your captain 34 days after naming him, when you could have just picked someone else. And yeah, maybe that would have had less of an effect. But I think what you've done is you've plunged this team into a bit of chaos. Now, I know that they won against the Toronto Maple Leafs on the night that they scratched him. And so what's next? The theoretical, oh, well, I'm not going to change a winning lineup. We'll see what he ends up doing. But I don't like the optics of it. Not when Sean Couturier, who has the Flyers logo tattooed on his ass, says that he doesn't like the way that he's been treated. And it's the silent treatment that really bothers me. And this is a repeated thing. Brandon Dubinsky this morning was on Morning Cup of Hockey with Colby Cohen and Johnny Lazarus. He's been blasting John Tortorella on social media the last few days of how this is just so typical. Scratches you and doesn't say a word. It's not, hey, how can I get better? What are you looking for? No, there's no conversation. It's just, you're out tonight. And I just think after a Selke trophy and all these things that Sean Couturier has done in his career, battling back from his injury, being named captain of this team, under contract for the next 7 years, 6 years, I think they owed him more than what they've given him. And let me say that. I think John Tortorella owed him more than what he got.
I'm torn on this. for a few reasons. Number one, I look, you know, no goals in 15 games, minus 14 and like minus 14 in 15 games for a playoff team. You're minus 14 on a non-playoff team. I get it because your team's junk, but the Flyers aren't junk. But with Couturier on the ice, he hasn't done much. I also think it's difficult because he wears the C, and even though we want everybody to be treated the same, not everybody gets treated the same. That's not reality. So that my bigger concern was, so A, if you're not communicating to the player, well, that's pretty gutless. But then you're the coach, you decide, hey, guess what? I'm gonna scratch my captain. And you talk so often about how we need guys to show up and you got to be accountable. Well, who went out and did the media presser? Rocky Thompson. Not John.
Hold on a second. That I've seen that criticism, and I actually asked the Flyers about it, and it's not fair. Because in Philly, the coach does his media avail before the morning skate. So whether Torts did it or whether Rocky Thompson did it, you wouldn't have known that Sean Couturier was going to be a healthy scratch. Now, here's the thing.
After the game, I didn't address it at all. But
that's the other part that really bothered me was he comes in, he says, I'm not taking questions about Sean. Like, you can't do it and then not answer questions about it.
And he's done that repeatedly. You can't tell your players, you guys need to be accountable because that's your job. Well, guess what, John? Part of your job is addressing your fan base through the media. That's part of your job. You might not like the part of the job. It's like your defenseman. Do you think they love blocking 100-mile-an-hour slap shots on the penalty kill? No, but it's part of their job. And you demand them to do the ugly parts of your job. So then do the same. Don't be a hypocrite. Do the same. So,
but the ugly parts of the job are actually engaging in conversation with a player and having that hard conversation.
I agree.
The whole idea of, hey, we're going to sit you out tonight and I don't owe you an explanation or I'm not going to talk to you about it is absolute bullshit.
Yeah, that's and the part where
it drives me nuts. Because the same guy who says, I don't need to answer questions, runs to the media after he gets fired and joins a panel and wants to be a media guy.
Yeah.
No, but doesn't owe them anything when he's the guy up there answering questions.
That's where I'm torn.
You can't suck and blow at the same time.
That's the point I make
every time.
Had Tortorella done this, and then you go about it, and guess what? You have the hard conversation. You have the hard conversation with the player. You have the conversation with your fans and the media, and then you move on. But he didn't do that. So to me, and he took the easy way out, which is something he preaches that he doesn't want from his players.
And it's Thursday and it occurred on Tuesday and we're still talking about it because he didn't put it to bed.
Yeah. And that's another point too. The story doesn't exactly die. Interesting. And you said it, Frank. Brandon Dubinsky on Morning Cup of Hockey here on the Daily Faceoff YouTube for those who want to check out that interview. Second one I got for you guys. You started the show talking, Gregor's rant was great about the playoff format. Let me ask you guys, from a Canucks perspective, their ideal first round opponent would be blank. It's interesting to actually kind of look at the standings and see they could still realistically play like three, maybe even four different teams in the Western Conference, but their ideal matchup is blank, Gregor.
Oh, it's Vegas right now. I'm like, I know people are like, what? They're the defending Stanley Cup champs. The Vegas Golden Knights for a long time have been junk. They have, if you want to go to December 1st, they've got like the 24th best record in the National Hockey League and then say, okay, well, maybe they had a tough stretch. They were injured. Yeah. Well, since March 1st, you know what? They're minus 10 in goal for goals against differential. They have the 24th best record in the National Hockey League. The only reason people are like, well, what if Mark Stone returns? Oh, what if Hart? Well, what if? It's all what ifs. I'm basing it on how they're playing right now, and they have not played well. Aiden Hill, their team defense, none of it is good. For whatever reason, it's like they hit a wall in the third period. Look at their goals against in the first and the second compared to the third period in the month of March. Like, do they not have team conditioning? Like, no. To me, it would be Vegas all day if I was Vancouver. I'm not saying it's easy, but right now they're the team that's playing the worst. And rarely do you just flip a switch when the playoffs come.
Well, I think the easy answer would be the Kings. Now, I don't know if Vegas is going to catch the Kings, but the Kings don't have goaltending. I don't think they're a cohesive team. They've played better of late, but I don't think the Kings are a real threat. Which is
why do you think Vegas is more of a threat? Based on what?
Based on a lot of the things you just said, but plus Aiden Hill started off the year at an elite level. My assumption is that at some point he'll find his game again. That at some point, might not be in the first round, Mark Stone will be back and Tomas Hertl will be playing. I just think it's a vastly different team when they're healthy. Because think about what we've said about Vegas the whole time. They've got maybe the most unique cap structure in the league. They've got bajillion-dollar players and then league min guys. When you take your bajillion-dollar players out of the lineup and you've got league min guys having to do more, it's a significant gap that Vegas has to overcome. It's you live by the sword, die by the sword. When everything's good and your cap is working and everyone's healthy, you're living. But when you take your top dogs out, they're dealing with problems that most other teams aren't because they don't have the mid-tier guys to step in and really do it.
I guess my counter to that is their defense is healthy and they're leaking goals all
But it them. Wasn't forever. But Shea Theodore missed the bulk of the season. Alec Martinez is out right now. Is he not? Or is he back?
No, he's been playing.
Okay. Like, they again, look at the drop-off between Pietrangelo, Theodore, and then Alec Martinez, and then 3, 4, 5, 6. It's a pretty significant one. So I'd still want to face the Kings, and then I'd want to face Nashville. Here's the other part. Like, I know that not always a team that wins the cup has a great next playoff run, but when you win a cup, you also know what it takes. You get to that level quicker than other teams that aren't used to it do. I think there's a significant disparity, as well as good as UC Saros is in net, between the talent on Nashville's roster and the talent on almost every other playoff team in the West. Significant gap.
The difference is just Saros. The existence of UC Saros changes that whole thing a little bit.
Like who outside of Philip Forsberg, who in Nashville's forward group are you afraid of?
The Tommy Novechkin disrespect is unreal.
Okay, who's a threat, honestly?
Yeah.
Roman Josi on the back end, who are you thinking about and game planning around if you're facing the Preds? It's like, no, we beat Saros, we win. That's how I would be thinking about it.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. I think if I had to power rank the ideal first round opponents, I'd probably go, like you said, LA first, just because I think goaltending is everything come playoff time, and I don't trust either of those two guys to get hot. Then I think I'm Nashville too, but they're a lot closer to Vegas than maybe I would have thought a couple of weeks ago. I like the point that Gregor brought up. Like, it can be hard to just sit there and flip the switch. Last one I got for you guys. I always feel bad for the fan bases whose teams are out of the playoff hunt. So I want to mix in one for them and ask you guys about the Montreal Canadiens. They're a couple of years into this rebuild now, but they've been sneaky competitive in a lot of games this year, 12 overtime losses on the season. The Montreal Canadiens are blank years away from being an actual playoff contender, Frank.
So when you say playoff contender, does that mean like
they enter the year as a team that you could realistically see making the playoffs with playoff expectations, kind of like the stage of Buffalo was at this year, even though they fell short? Like, this was a year where it's like, hey, no more excuses. You should be a playoff team.
I want to say next year, but I think that's a stretch. Like, I love the stuff that we've seen from Slafkovský the last 6 weeks. I can't wait to see David Reinbacher and Logan Mailloux and Lane Hudson transform their back end.
Caden Gooley's already in there too, and he's good.
Yep. I'm going to say that they are not a playoff contending team, but they are a playoff team in 2026.
All right. Jay?
No. 20, at least I think 3 more years. They, they got some good young players on paper, and I've seen lots of teams have that. And then going from paper to actually winning, you mentioned Buffalo. Buffalo's on the verge of 13 consecutive years out of the playoffs. Everybody thought Ottawa was going to take a step, and on paper, they got better players in Montreal, and they haven't. And I know Marty St. Louis is, you know, is beloved by his players and, you know, gets the most out of them and all that stuff, but they have lots of holes on that team. And I don't, plus I look at the East. I just look at the, in their own division, who's falling out. So,
well, you would think that by then Tampa falls out, right?
Well, 3 years. Yeah, I 26 is only 2 years. Are you saying like 26, 27 or like 25?
No, 26? I think in 2025, 26, the Montreal Canadiens make the playoffs.
No, I would take that bet right now. So I will say no. I won't even be surprised if it's not till 27, 28.
What kind of odds would you give me though? It's not really, will you, is it a yes or no? You'd have to shade the odds for me.
Well, I'll think about it.
All right, there you go. That is a wrap on today's edition of Fill in the Blank, delivered by DoorDash.
Now, before we go, Frank, you mentioned something. You believe 100% Mark Stone will be ready for round one?
No, I said I don't think that. I said I think the true answer is that the Vegas Golden Knights don't know. And I think they probably have a pretty good sense that he is not going to be ready for round one. I think they need to play a little bit to get him back, but we'll see.
Yeah, we will. It'll be a great week. We'll find out by next week. There are some teams I think that we could knock out of the playoff race, even though they think they're mathematically still in, but the Penguins, the Devils, God love the Sabres. I'd love to see them get in, but I don't think so. And even in the West, you know, Minnesota has 12 games left. They're 3 points back of Vegas. You know, if Vegas just plays 500 hockey even, right, and gets another, that's 93 points. Means Minnesota's got to get, 17. They got to go like 8-3-1, which isn't crazy, but still, it's pretty hard to do when you look at the remaining
schedule. They got shellacked last night in L.A.
Yeah, that's why.
They only play one time in the next 8 days.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll be,
by then there'll probably be a pretty significant gap.
Yeah. So that was a tough
one. And the team that they're playing on Saturday is St. Louis, who's right behind them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a huge game. Whoever, if they lose in regulation, whichever team, I think that officially puts them out, I'd say they're probably out anyway. But Frank, have yourself a wonderful weekend, and we will chat with you on Monday.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. And let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount. And that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first. And you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.